I want to thank all of you for having joined this retreat and having joined Janai and myself. It's always a big thank you to Janai. It's always a pleasure to teach with him. And it always surprises me how things get woven into each other, although we sit in different places here in England. I think possibly I've just, for those of you who have never done yoga before, my hope is that I have enabled you to see that everybody can do yoga. And those of you who have your own yoga practice, and it might be a different style, that hopefully you've got something out of it, some ways of integrating some of the things we did in your already existing practice. I think it comes down when we really feel well-being in ourselves, such a difference how we live our lives. And when we see the roots of the yoga practice, that is not just being on a mat for 60 minutes, 2 hours. When we see it in the bigger context, what I tried to lay out yesterday and in the afternoon session, then we can hopefully really, really understand that yoga is moving in life. How do I move in this life? And I'm the container for something moving through me. And therefore, how can I move in this life and being part of this life and still honor who I am, where I am? If I would put together in one sentence or in a few words, what the teaching also for me has become, because when I started off, I was knowing yoga also only as a physical practice. And it was triggered by my brother, 1 year older, and telling me always I was as stiff as an ironing board. It's this type of brothers. They always find something how they can tease their sisters. And it stayed with me, and there was some truth in it. And I think due to reason, some of my emotional holding had made me a bit stiffer. And I think sometimes he said to me, "Oh, when you walk like a stork, you know, this animal with these legs." And I don't think it was so bad, but it was this teasing. And so my first experiences with the yoga were quite painful. Not only because of the practices, but in those days, there was not many yoga around. And therefore, my first class of yoga was also with a really good teacher, but there was a bit of a comparing going on. So everybody in the class was praised except for me. And it was my first time around. And it was like we did a posture, and I was already squeezing my hand to get to my feet. And then I heard him say, "Maria, you're doing really well. Oh, and John, how you have improved." And the only name that wasn't mentioned was me. And I am not, it was a lovely man. And I think he wasn't even aware of it. And it was really early days of learning yoga, and it was not so much available. But obviously wanted to mention it well, and I pulled a bit more, and I walked out of the class and had really pulled my neck. Luckily, it didn't stop me even to go to this teacher, because despite all that, I really felt something was in that yoga. And I continued. I met a really lovely, lovely, I had a yoga teacher, his name Robert von Heckerin, amazing person, very old. And then at one point, I came to my Indian yoga teacher who was teaching in Europe after he had been invited to the European Yoga Congress. So over that, those many experiences, my understanding of the yoga broadened. But there was always something really enjoyable of moving my body. And moving my body and coming through that movement of my body into a deep source within. Some healing that was totally independent of circumstances around me. Sometimes, really, to the extent I, when one of my relationships broke up, my whole body was shaking. I hardly could move. I was really in that freeze forward stress response. And I went on a retreat, and that retreat, I was able to sustain some ways of being with myself, coming back to move. So I learned that something I could access through the yoga, and that stayed with me. And so I think what got me into the yoga and equally into the Vipassana, which then led me to attend Gaia House retreats, was that something in me was seeking. Something in me felt all the time there is something, there is something. And I think the Benedictine monk, Richard Moore, Rohr, or no, he's Franciscan, I think. He says it is because in his language, inside of you, God is hidden and God is calling you all the time to come to him. And I think that sense of lacking is that sense that something calls us. Is there a place where I can come back to a fullness? Is there a place where I can experience total well-being? And I think that that is the journey that we have engaged in. And it's beautiful that we could share that together, the journey of the Vipassana and the journey of the yoga. And the words that came to my mind in the recent years were much more about kindness and about love. And I quoted Pope Francis. I find that very, what does love requires of us is to accept limitations. Limitations that we might have in the body, limitations, and also to limit ourselves. So that we don't go into destroying this earth any further. So there's something about accepting limits around our abilities. That is an act of care, and also taking responsibility in the ways how we are moving into the world. And that's asana, moving into the world. And therefore, it's not separate. So even if this retreat ends, we continue our journey. There is the Quakers who are very actively engaged. They're often confused with the Amish. They're very actively engaged in the world too. They have a lovely expression too. What does love requires of us in this moment? What does love requires of me? And I think that can become a guiding principle. What does love requires of me? And that includes me. There is a story from a rabbi. It might be a story about Rabbi Hillel. He is one famous from some time ago. And the story goes that there is a prospective student and he wants to learn the Torah. And he goes to several teachers and he says, I want to learn the Torah in one day. And all the teachers say, impossible, impossible. You need years to learn about the Torah. And he comes to Rabbi Hillel. And Rabbi Hillel says, oh, that's fine. I can do that. And the student is a bit taken aback. And Rabbi says, I tell you now the core teachings. Don't do unto others what you want to be done to yourself. And the rest of the Torah is pure commentary on this key message. And if you take anything away from this retreat, I would be happy if you would take that away from the retreat, that what does love requires of us? And at times we might feel a bit worried to go back. We might perceive the world as difficult or harsh. But if we touch that deep ground in ourselves, we can see that and we can experience there is a benevolence in this world. When we truly open up to our vulnerability, to the cracks, hidden, known, but we all carry our cracks and wounds in various ways. When we really open up to our vulnerability, our fragility, then we can perceive something that is really holding and supporting us. And that will then enable us to move into this world with trust, with a deep trust and with a joy to add to this world. And one image that stays with me is sometimes you can see beautiful cacti, and they have all these spiky bits. And one flower comes out of that spiky cactus. And you so tremendously enjoy that. And if we can remember that, despite our feelings that sometimes the world can be very spiky, we still can be one of these small flowers showing up there. And so much joy we can give to others just purely through the presence of our being, through the engagement. And I hope that's what you take from these days, that you connected with that source that enables us to flourish, even in the midst when things are sometimes a bit difficult or spiky. So, in this way, it's lovely when you have a practice that moves your body to help you with your well-being, but see the width and depth that is offered in the yoga, so that you can move into the world from this place. And thank you for listening to me, and thank you for coming and joining the classes. And I all wish you well, and thank you. And I'm handing over to Janai. And that was in a way just enabling you to move with ease. I will put on the notice board, because some people ask, I have a regular Zoom Sunday evening session, donation based. So that is my email. And if you want to attend that, you can just send me an email and I'll put you on my group shared email list. And that's a donation-based class so that everybody can attend that class who wants. So, if you want to continue in this style of yoga, thank you so much. And now I give over to you, Janai.
Thank you, Helen. It's always so lovely to teach with you, and I also just so appreciate seeing the real benefit and hearing so much of the real benefit and appreciation from everybody who's receiving your teaching. And it's so clear that it's precious. And yeah, thank you. What I'd like to speak about this evening is really that at this point in the evening is really this question of how do we continue in our practice. And in a certain way, we keep doing what we're already doing. That's how we continue something. And we might just wonder, what is it that we're doing that we might continue? The short version of what I might say is just, it's good, keep doing it. But what is this that we've been doing? Apart from obviously, the techniques and the forms, in a sense, what we've done is we've come together with others to explore what we find is important or meaningful or of value, and using tools that others have found helpful to deepen and develop the possibilities of our human hearts, our minds, our bodies, our lives. And this is something that's really important to sustain the way in which we find support from each other's, and there's the opportunity to continue to join in with Helen on her weekly classes, and that's wonderful. And since the pandemic, almost a year ago now, we began, or maybe it is a whole year ago, we began the online Dharma Hall at Gaia House. So 5 days a week, there's a session which has some time for meditation, but also some time for community, led by different teachers, and I come along quite regularly when I'm able. And there's a chance to connect with others and practice together, and it's so helpful. Nobody can do this path or practice for us, but that doesn't mean we have to do it on our own. And actually, it's important to understand we all need support. And that support can take many forms, but this is one of the forms and ways we can support it ourselves simply by practicing, but support ourselves and each other by practicing together. And that's something I would really invite and encourage you to sustain if you feel you would like to, if you find that this is beneficial for you. Seek out others to practice with. Online is probably the way that will need to happen at the moment, and in the future, perhaps in your region or locality, or maybe both. And this practice that begins with a simple connecting, turning towards, with a sensitive and steady willingness to meet our experience, that deepens into calming and quieting our reactivities, softening our tendency to contract and resist our experience, that there's a kind of a stabilizing, a unifying, an opening and a softening of our way of being in the world, that starts to lead to a sense of more spaciousness and ease in the midst of the challenges and the difficulties. We start to find ourselves less bound and less limited. And this is different than the way Helen was using limitation just before, where there's that sort of limiting of our urge to consume or entertain ourselves or that kind of urge. And it's more that there's a kind of a releasing ourselves from the limits that we impose upon ourselves about what is possible for us. We start to find there is more freedom in life than we may have previously realized. And this is not something dependent upon our circumstances. Although, of course, our experience is always affected by our circumstances. And in that, and this is one of the primary ways in which spiritual practice bears its fruit, as we start to find more space, we're more fluid, we're more able to move amidst the world as it presents itself, as it appears, not demanding that it has to be other than it is in order for us to be willing to be wholeheartedly here. And at the same time, what we also find is that in that opening, in that sensitizing, in that connecting, quite naturally, we also feel the depth of our interrelatedness, the sharedness of our humanity, the sharedness of our co-participation in this world with all that we share this world with, all human beings, all creatures, all living things, all ecosystems, all of life, in fact, we start to see as part of our own life, touches our life, and our life also touches this. This is what we recognize, that our life is always being affected by and affecting the world. So we're not in control of it, but we are able to influence it. We do make a difference by how we live our lives. And one of the expressions of that that naturally emerges from our practice is the wish to contribute to the well-being of others and other living things and living systems, and the wish to refrain so far as we can from causing harm to others. And so the practice of the precepts of refraining from causing harm that we took at the beginning of the retreat, to refrain from causing harm to other living beings, to refrain from taking things that aren't freely given to us, to refrain from causing harm through misusing sensuality, to refrain from causing harm through speech, and to refrain from using intoxicants in ways that lead to cloudiness, confusion, and actions we might often regret, out of respect for life. We can have this as a foundation. I think someone asked, I think maybe it was on the first or second day, I don't remember, about conditions for peaceful, for being at peace. And I made a response. But one piece I didn't say, that one of the conditions is this: having a commitment to minimizing, reducing, and avoiding causing harm. That's a foundation for peace that is of immense power. And part of how that also presents itself and calls to us is that we start to see, as we become more conscious, more awake, that we are involved in systems and in structures within our world that contribute to the harm of others and even of ourselves, that we don't wish or intend or consciously mean to be part of, but nonetheless do become part of. And we see that the consumption of our society and the materialism is something that's not sustainable, as Helen was reflecting on. And so it's so important for us to actually see this is the truth of things. We cannot have infinite growth on a finite planet. And already the very ways we are living are impacting the birthright of future generations, and in fact the current generation. That climate destabilization and ecological destruction is already impacting many. And the impacts will accelerate if we do not address our continued economic and social activity that produces the greenhouse gases that are causing this. And if we don't restrain the consumption that is leading to the devastation of so much of our natural environment. As John Francis, an African-American activist and a remarkable sort of wise, beautiful being who walked for many, many years, gave up on all mechanized transport. He once said, "We are not in the environment. We are the environment. How we are in this world is how we will experience our world. Not just personally, although that's part of it, and we do and take care that way, but also collectively." And likewise, we can become aware, as well as our impact in the global systems of balance that are out of balance due to human activity that need addressing, we can also see within the human community that there are groups and communities within our larger community that are not given equal support, not given equal voice, not given equal privilege to other more privileged or fortunate communities within our world. And there are ways in which, even if we don't wish or intend to be, somehow we can and do become part of this. And in these areas, we're asked to educate ourselves, to learn, to understand what goes on for communities of that are subject to oppression in our world. And they may be communities defined by their ethnic heritage, which is what is sometimes spoken about also in terms of race and the impact of racism in our world. Something to consider and to look at, to see that it's not just sort of prejudice or bigoted views, but it's actually structures that have been put in place that are oppressive, that some are privileged in relationship to and by, and others are oppressed by. And we can see this also with regard to patriarchy, which again is not just about views that one individual might have of another. It's not just sexist or prejudiced views. It's about systems and structures that are oppressive. And just as in the last year or more, there have been a reawakening and a rearising on the streets of the Black Lives Matter movement and the calling for racial justice. So too, in the Reclaim the Streets here in the UK right now, arising around the tragic death and the ongoing deaths of women at the hands of violence from men, the need to address this in our community. And these are things that to me are part of our spiritual practice, because we cannot be at peace or happy in ourselves in a bubble. Only when we are all cared for will any one of us feel truly cared for and at peace, because we are connected. And there are ongoingly new territories opening up. And for myself, as someone who, you know, grew up mostly, it feels like for me, in the 70s and 80s, having been born in the 60s, some of the battles that were then seem to have moved on into new territories. And I'm really struck by the circumstance and the courage of people seeking to bring to my attention the nature of what it means to not actually experience their own sense of gender being in accordance with that which was assigned them when they were born. And so one of the things that I've learned, and this is to not make assumptions here, to not assume that I know another person's gender identity unless they let me know what that is. And in this way, we start to give each other space for being who they are. And that actually gives us space for being who we are. And there's also a term that I've encountered recently, which some of you may also know about, that the term neurodiversity. So commonly in our culture, what is the majority phenomena or characteristic becomes normalized, and what is different somehow is treated as not normal, when in fact it's equally normal, it's just not as common. And I had the amazing experience of coming to hear just recently of my sister in her 50s being diagnosed as neurodiverse in ways that, and on the autism spectrum, in fact. And it's so amazing how healing it's been for her to know about this. And for me to know, oh, that's how she comes to be who she is and how she is in ways that I could never understand. And in truth, though I tried really hard, could never quite open my heart to. And now I can, because I understand her. And I couldn't before, for all that I tried. There's something that's actually really liberating for all of us when we understand, when we make the effort to put ourselves in the position of someone whose world looks different from where they sit than our world looks from where we sit. And there's so many ways this happens. This is part of what it means to go beyond the limitation of self, to understand that whatever it is that is the location we have gives us particular insights, but also creates blindnesses. And that from each other we can learn and we can see and we can move forward and grow together as a community, as a society, as a humanity, and as one of the elements of the ecology of our world. And to find ways to engage, to respond, to share in small ways or large ways is, for me, an essential part of spiritual practice. It doesn't mean there's something you have to do that looks like what someone else does. And I've chosen to get involved with nonviolent civil disobedience in the last 2.5 years with Extinction Rebellion. And I found it incredibly touching and beautiful as a nonviolent activist to try and make a difference in terms of certain things that I, for many years, felt hopeless about. And I think for all of us, finding our own way, it might be that we just are making a few phone calls and talking to people, or writing letters or signing petitions, or just extending our hearts to those we see to be in trouble or difficulty. And there are many different ways we can engage. And I'm not going to try and list them here, though. There may be, I see in the chat, someone wishing to share and offer suggestions, which, of course, is wonderful and lovely, and please do. For me, what I'm really wanting to say, and I hope I'm sharing this in a way that feels okay, because I really don't know what for anyone else would make sense or feel right. All I can say and want to say here is that I think our inner development, and my experience is that the inner processes of spiritual deepening, of development, of awakening, are totally woven into an engagement with the world, because we are not separate from it. We are not apart from it. And for some, it may be that our work is done as spiritual inner work, and that's our offering to the world. It doesn't have to be more than that, but to put it in the context that we know that it's for this too. And for others, it may take more active forms or more specific forms. And all of that, for me, is part of our journey. And in all of that, we need each other, for both the quiet inner work, for the perhaps more challenging or confrontational outer work that our world also demands. And in this, we can support each other. And I really ask that we find and seek support. And so, in closing, I'm aware in speaking of these things, which some might see as outside the realm of a retreat, that it may not land for each person in a way that's easy. And I hope that this has landed in a way that's okay for you. And thank you for your practice, for your care, and for your many expressions of support and kindness that I've seen and heard and received and observed being offered to each other over the course of this retreat. So, again, I want to say thank you to you all for your practice, for all your perspectives, for all your willingnesses and your courage to share, to explore, to be here together. I'd like to say thank you to Gaia House and particularly to Michelle and Terry for the quiet but incredibly supportive background presence that they have offered to us. And again, Helen, thank you for your wonderful shared offering of this retreat. It's really a blessing. And thank you to everyone. Thank you to you all. May our practice here be for the well-being of each person, each of us, and may it also be for the well-being of all of us, of everyone, for all beings and all that lives in this world and beyond.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.